show puts me to sleep.
Well,
ever. But when I listen to you, it's stimulating. I hear you have an open mind, and you're talking about the world, and you're willing to let other people who are thinking along completely different tracks just come in, and you know, you go into where they're at. That's very beautiful. That's free speech.
Well,
what you're doing.
There's a time and a place for dangerous ideas. The time is until 3:30, and the place is WBAI.
After you will come some more free thought.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, 24 hours a day we try to present things here. And again, it's not for everyone. I'm sure I'm putting some people to sleep. And, you know, I'm sure I'm making some people bang their heads against the wall and other people just, you know, shout out in all kinds of strange tongues. But that's what it's all about, folks. That's not just WBAI. That's life. That's democracy. That's what it's like to be a human being. And, you know, we don't do it enough.
You're right.
That's the point I'm trying
Absolutely
to make.
Right.
Okay?
Yes.
Thanks very much for calling.
No problem. Have
right.
a good day.
You too. Our number is 279-3400. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm filling in for Tom Whisker. I'll be here for about another hour or so, and I'll be back again next week and the week after that, too. Our number 279-3400, we're talking about U.S. policy in El Salvador, and I'd like to know more about the demonstration on Saturday, if folks are planning to go to that, if they have any further information on it, or other phone numbers, you know, whatever you can pass along to help out, because it would be so great to see 100,000 people march in the streets of New York. And like I said before, why stop there? You know, we march on Saturday and we wake up on Sunday and say, has anything changed? No? Okay, back onto the streets. And we do it again. And then we do it on Monday. Okay, we miss work. Who cares? We miss an hour of work. You know, is being fired the worst thing in the world to happen? Or is the knowledge that that your inaction is responsible for things like what happened 2 weeks ago with six priests murdered? I mean, you know, like I said, the U.S. government did not go in there and murder six priests. I'm not going to say that. But it was the actions. We set it up. We set it up so that it could happen. Had this policy not been in effect, that would not have happened. Something else might have happened, certainly. We don't know. But I'm saying, what is wrong with simply allowing events in a foreign country to take place? In other words, if the rebels want to take over the country, and the rebels are able to take over the country, let them take over the country. And if the people are unhappy with what's going on, then they'll march in the streets and they'll get that government out like they did in Eastern Europe. It's the only way you can possibly do something like that. You cannot go into a country and simply instill what you think the people there want, because invariably it's not what they want. They want to be able to decide things for themselves. And right now, I think the majority of people in El Salvador just want to be left alone for the moment and to work out their own problems. I don't know. I may be wrong, but that's the way I feel, and I think we need to talk about it some more. 279-3400. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, the situation in El Salvador is simply irrational. There are no rational grounds for what is going on there. The same position that we take towards Cuba, that they're the worst enemy that we have, makes exactly the same no kind of sense when you consider that the capitalists, us, are doing big business with all the so-called communists around the world. So what on earth is the logic for considering that this tiny little Nicaragua, which has, what is it, one escalator in the whole country, and Cuba, which is terribly impoverished, what is the reason for considering them mortal enemies when we're doing business with huge communist neighbors in Europe, in Asia?
Well, it's the age-old thing, U.S. interests, you know, and I'd say to hell with U.S. interests. Our national interests belong here in the nation where we need them, you know?
Well, what are the U.S. interests? What would hurt us by making friends with Cuba and Nicaragua?
Because
what would we lose? We would gain an enormous trading partner again.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba was a very big trading partner of the United States as far as medicines, cloth, food, I mean, you name it, which are now embargoed, as you know. We would gain enormously. What's there to lose from this? I mean, it makes me think that it's just some terrible mind warp. There's some, you know, in Foggy Bottom in the State Department, there's some terrible ancient grudge going on that has to be settled by this kind of vendetta, because practically it makes no sense at all.
It's, you know, I don't want to oversimplify this, but it's you can draw parallels to the way human beings react among themselves. And, you know, you have somebody just, you know, stop talking to you for no particular reason. They think you're a bad person, and they won't communicate with you. And, you know, you may very well be a bad person, but the fact that you stop communicating and spread all these vicious rumors and lies and things like that certainly doesn't help the situation at all. And to a degree, that's what the U.S. government is doing. The U.S. government is like this this disgruntled aunt-in-law that didn't get the right seat at a wedding 2 years ago. And
that's kind of a happy way of looking at it. In truth,
mm-hmm.
Thousands of innocent civilians are being killed as a result of this enmity. I mean, if it was just a matter of, well, we've got this rotten attitude towards them, we don't like the way they have a mole on their cheek, or we don't like the way they look, that would be one thing. But we are dangerous to have this an enemy.
Of course.
The United States is an enemy of someone. I mean, they literally poison the land and the people forever. Agent Orange in Vietnam, if you like, all the people that are dying in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, thousands of children. You know, even they've talked in the United Nations about the environmental ruin of El Salvador because of what we're doing with the militia that we have, that we're giving to the army. Sorry, with the ammunition we're giving, we're poisoning the water and the land, cutting down the forest that the guerrillas can't hide. I mean, you know, it isn't just a nice case of the McCoys and the Hatfields, or
mm-hmm.
you know, the old enemies.
Right.
This is dangerous stuff.
It's certainly, well, when nations play this game, yes, a lot of people die, and it's sick. It really is. But we're a part of the sickness.
And I wish that the press wasn't so in the government's pocket that they would ask more honest questions, and that they wouldn't accept government handouts as news.
Right. Well, you see, it's yeah. We can blame the press, we can blame the government, but in the end, it's us. We have to make the change, and you know, we can affect the press. It's not easy. We've got to change their whole way of looking at things and what is an important news story and all that. But you know, we can do it by being out there every day and making sure they don't forget about this.
Absolutely. I don't know if you heard the program before, but a young woman came on Carletta Joy Walker's program and said that she lives in the country, I think upstate New York, and she was so depressed by what was happening in El Salvador. She just, it's like a weight on her. She couldn't get rid of it. But she didn't know what to do. She's not the type that goes to demonstrations, she said, or marches. And then something came to her. She said she was working in a barn, and she decided to put a signboards on herself saying, "I cannot stand what the U.S. government is doing in El Salvador. As an American, I resent this, I hate it, and I oppose it in every possible way." She signed her name, and she came down to the village and marched around there, and then got some more courage and walked around New York. And she said it was just wonderful. She did that, I think, for a few days. So she said everyone can find their own way
mm-hmm.
to make a constant statement, you know, if something...
That's great.
They just can't stand it. I thought that was wonderful.
That's amazing. And if you can find that thing, whether it's writing a letter or marching down the street or just calling up your friend and saying, you know, isn't this awful? What can we do about it? You know, just get the dialogue going.
Go box out, yes.
Because we're better than this. You know, we're not the kind of people that just sit back and say, you know, let everything happen. We don't care about other people. We do. We're
right.
A warm society. You know, it's we don't investigate as much as we should. We're not encouraged to.
No, we're not. We've got blankets thrown over us.
Right, because, you know, an educated public is a dangerous thing.
Right. Keep them on drugs and keep them quiet and keep them out of the voting
uh-huh.
voting booths. And, you know, I have two more things to suggest. Well, I like your program very much. I think that we should stop propagating this myth, this old cliche that America is the richest country in the world. First of all, statistically, it's not true. Even in terms of just infant mortality, we're 17th. Cuba's ahead of us in having a lower infant mortality. But, you know, as far as homelessness goes and infrastructure crumbling, illiteracy all these things. We're really not the richest country in the world by any means. I think many people who've lived in Europe and certainly the Scandinavian countries would say that they have a much finer standard of living and certainly a much better quality of life. If we consider richness just to be our extravagance in wasting things, that way perhaps we're richest, but not in any of the ways that really count. And so as media people, you really should be very careful in trying to tone this down. We're not the richest country in the world. And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, what's always confused me is why on a Pacifica station, the very name Pacifica, is there a program called Weaponry with Tom Whiskers?
Well, it's part of our ongoing philosophy here that education is important, and whether it's education about the military or education about about foreign cultures, it's real. Weaponry is something that is there. And where else do you learn about it? You have to know what is really happening. Now, it's not a program where we talk about how great the U.S. Defense Department is and how we can turn Lebanon into an ashtray and all that kind of thing.
you don't think that it sort of encourages the love of military lore and by having a program like this?
Well, I don't think not having a program like this would discourage it. Let's put it that way. And I think having a program like that wakes some people up. It tells people, wow, I have no idea. It gives you specifics that you never get anywhere else. And I think it's very important to have that available if you want it.
Okay, if you could address this one other thing that I mentioned about America being the richest country in the world. Maybe in the 50s we were. But do you really think that's the case now?
Well, we have more TV channels. we don't have more newspapers, which is an interesting thing. We've got a lot of space.
Space meaning?
Wide open space, that kind of thing. Well, let's see. How are we rich? We got lots of fast food joints.
We also have the highest cancer rates in the world.
Highest cancer rate. Well, that's bad, though.
Something like, I believe the statistic is now 88% of our water is polluted. There is no safe. You can't go to a nice crystal stream and drink water from it anymore.
Right. So that's progress then. So we're the most advanced nation as far as technology goes. You've just proven that.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, by having an 88% pollution rate in the water, that proves how advanced we are. Rich is a very relative term, and you could even come up with something and say this proves that we're rich, and somebody else would say, my God, that proves we're poor. That's the worst thing. You can't judge it monetarily. You can't judge it idealistically. You can't judge it by the landscape or anything.
For example, that the UN judges a country's wealth by how many live births per 100,000 or per 1,000. How much? What's the literacy rate? How many people share a certain amount of space? There are certain statistics to go by, but I think apart from all of that, you have to judge quality of life. And I don't know. Have you lived in Europe or in Scandinavian countries?
Well, I wandered around Europe for about 6 weeks this summer, and we have advantages in some ways. They have advantages in other ways. But I think they're closer to reality. You can talk about things, you can criticize without offending.
Yes,
And that's the first step, I think.
Yeah, no, we're not a people given to good political debates.
No, I can't understand why. If we're the bastion of democracy, as we keep saying we are, why is that so?
It just isn't, and I've seen people in seemingly intelligent arguments suddenly get, hey, you little pink there, fella. They start calling names if someone's presenting a rational argument for why are there poor people and can't we do something about it.
Right.
That old anti-communist reflex comes back.
I think if you explain it in this way, when that kind of talk starts, that means that the person has run out of arguments and can't figure out any kind of
That's
comeback.
Exactly right.
So they have to resort to name calling and accusing the person of being a communist or something like that, which tells you something about the state of these problems. Anyway, thanks very much for calling and
bringing
those things up. Those are very pertinent points. Our number is 279-3400. And interesting. I would like to play one song and then go right back to the phones, but this one song is fascinating for this particular reason. What this last caller just brought up, are we the richest country in the world? Do we have the highest standard of living? You know, is America what America says it's supposed to be? Now, when you look at the news, when you look at what's happening in the rest of the world and what's not happening here, what we're doing in other parts of you know, the globe, when you look at things like librarians being investigated for defending free speech, when you look at all the contradictions, you know, it starts hitting you. And you start saying, well, maybe this isn't the place that I thought it was. Maybe it's changing. Maybe, you know, there's a whole other way of looking at this country. And it's kind of disturbing, especially if you think that there's nothing we can do about it, if you think that you know, it's a lost cause. But also, it makes you think. You know, just think about where you stand in relation to it all. If you're a hypocrite, you know, if you're completely powerless, if you've been spouting all this rhetoric, you know, these last few years, it's something to think about. And the reason I'm going to play this song here, it's a song by the Beatles, and guaranteed it was not written with this in mind, but I'd like you to listen to this song and think about America in a different sense.
I'm looking through you. Where did you go? I thought I knew you. What did I know? You don't look different, but you have changed. I'm looking through you. You look the same. Your lips are moving. I cannot hear. Your voice is soothing.
Sounds terrible. Hell's wrong with that turntable? I don't know. For the last couple of days, we've been getting horrible sound out of that turntable. I don't know why. I think there's something wrong with the stylus or something. But sorry about that, folks. If you could understand the words through that, you may have gotten a different type of meaning out of that song. And I'm sure Paul McCartney's on the phone now saying, "How dare you say I was, you know, questioning America when I wrote that song?" Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's an interesting way of looking at it. You know, it's kind of neat. But I think we have to constantly be questioning, constantly be looking at things in alternative ways. Whether it's America, whether it's music, whether it's ourselves, it's extremely important to be constantly reevaluating and, I guess, second guessing to a degree. Otherwise, we never really learn. We never really make that step, you know. Our number is 279-3400. I'd like to hear what you think. And that's me. Good evening. Good morning. How you doing?
You know, I'm sorry to start about this German thing.
Okay.
Because, it's really a fairly simple matter. It's not a simple matter. I mean, George Bush has got to convince the West Germans that the reason that German unification is impossible is because the Soviet Union doesn't want it. And I'm absolutely convinced of that, having heard the remarks of a Central Committeeman who said, and I'll quote, he says that the United States doesn't want it even more than the Soviet Union doesn't want it, which to me even has ominous overtones. In that, it is my understanding that the United States has achieved now global hegemony, and I think wouldn't it be a shame that if, since we don't have SDI implemented yet, that we got nuked, having achieved our worldwide domination for the first time in the history of mankind. So why should we screw it up over Germany? So George Bush does. Germany is fairly significant, and I think the president has to somehow soothe the Germans over. In fact, that we really can't push the Russians on this, because the reunification of Germany is putting a knife to the Soviet Union's throat, and I don't think they'll stand for that. And what bothers me more is I'm hearing a lot of stuff attributing that to Jewish sentiment. And I don't think Jewish sentiment has anything to do with it. I think certain people are trying to frighten Jewish people into saying they don't want German reunification. I wouldn't blame them for feeling that way. But I don't believe Jewish sentiment has anything to do with international superpower politics.
Well, you know...
Excuse me?
It's interesting that you bring this up, because I've been thinking about this over the last few weeks. And, it's kind of a weird point, but if you say to yourself or anybody else that Germany cannot be reunited because it would be a danger to the rest of the world, isn't that a racist type of a thing to say? Because,
well, you know, it's an evil thing to say, but
it is.
We're talking about people's feelings.
Well, I mean, are the Germans, is there something inherent in Germans?
There's not. I'll agree with you on that. There is.
Okay.
But I'm not talking a matter of truth. I'm talking a matter of propaganda.
Right. Right. Now, but keep this in mind, sir. The Germans today are not by any, I mean, you know, physically they're not the same people, but mentally it's completely different. It's completely different. They have learned from their history. They're aware of their history, you know?
Yeah, to me, the Germans never were evil. That was never the issue. The issue has always been Germany's potential power.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Germany is the Germany is a tragic case.
Uh-huh.
Germany is a superpower that didn't come into existence, or existed but briefly, but was smashed in World War One, actually, because of the stupid policies of the Kaiser. And the thing is that there is a certain amount of complexity here, and I'm hearing I know the American liberals don't want that, right? And I think they're incompetent in their assessment, but they tend to be protective of the Soviet Union, and I think that's what's motivating them. But the thing is, if a certain person has a liberal politics, then he'll come out, and he won't say, I as a liberal don't want German reunification because I'm sympathetic to a leftist point of view. He'll say, he'll speak as a Jew, right? And the problem here is that then the antipathy that's going to bring down from the Germans and from the American conservatives is going to fall on the Jews and not on the liberals. And the Jews are really innocent victims in that they are not political, see? And they don't deserve this. And I also feel that the Jews were very badly manipulated in the last presidential election, that the Jewish vote went for the Democrats, when the Democrats actually were anti-Semitic in their overtones, whereas the Republicans were rather supportive of Israel.
Hold on a second. You just brought up something that's always been a problem with me.
Uh-huh.
If you're anti-Israel, you're anti-Semitic?
That's right.
I don't see that at all, because I know lots of people that are anti...
Israel is anti-Semitic.
Not anti the existence of Israel. Maybe we're getting off on the wrong foot here. I'm talking about anti-Israeli policies.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Because Israel is looking out for its interests.
Well, it's the same thing.
And those who really are anti-Semitic come down and they say, well, Israel's doing evil things and all that. It's masking anti-Semitism.
I'm not denying.
Anti-Semitic.
So I'm not denying that there are anti-Semites that say these things, but if you're going to say that every person that says Israel's policies should be changed are anti-Semitic, that's an injustice.
As far as they're entitled to say, but outside is really, it's kind of crummy. I mean, if they're Palestinians, they can understand it, right? Because they have an interest, right? But all these other people, especially American liberals, the way they've been coming down on Israel, you know, I think that I think the liberals are really the source of black anti-Semitism. They whip it up. I don't think black people left to themselves would do that, and they wouldn't be allowed to get away with it. And they have political support from liberals who, from some misguided policy or greedy political incompetence, are trying to grab power. And they're willing to sacrifice the Jews. I think they did it in the Roosevelt administration in attacking Hitler.
Well, sir, I'm not going to say that you're mistaken saying that these liberal people are behind this, but I think it's wrong to categorize in any way to say that the liberals are behind it or the conservatives are behind it. To a degree, there's all kinds of different groups here.
The liberals.
I'm sorry, continue.
I don't think the conservatives are behind it. I think the liberals are behind it.
Well,
always been behind it.
Okay.
And they're doing it again on this German issue. The liberals don't want to reunificate. They're afraid of it, right? Their fears are totally misbegotten because it ain't going to happen. It can happen. The Russians won't allow it, and the United States doesn't want it anyhow, because who the hell needs another superpower in this world to rival the United States, right? But the liberals have this, what makes their minds work, but their minds don't work very well. And the thing is, they're coming out, and they're bringing up the Holocaust again. They are. And they're talking to these Jews, and I know it's a liberal talking, because I talk to Orthodox Jews, and they understand. And even when Shamir talks, Shamir says he doesn't think it's going to happen anyhow, right? So it's coming from left-wing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that what ought to happen is Jewish people should recognize the danger in this, and that there's a possibility. I don't say George Bush would do it, but he's going to have to talk to a very powerful country called West Germany, and he's going to have to explain why he isn't pushing harder on German reunification. Because they're already talking about it in the German parliament, about reunification.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's still they're not negotiating that in East Germany.
Right? And after all the walls come down, they're talking about some sort of economic agreements. So it's, you know, it's a specter rising, and already the conservatives in the United States are balking. Because there's trouble in the Republican Party, as you know, between conservatives and the moderates like George Bush. And the conservatives are willing to make an issue out of this. And they'll come down on the Jews, and I've heard it already. So what will happen is, the upshot of this is, if it's attributed to the Jews, West Germany will not be cooperative and pro-Israel as it used to be, and the conservatives are going to start in on the Jews, and already the Jews are getting it from the blacks, and I think enough already, that if the liberals don't want reunification of Germany, they should say, I, as a liberal, am frightened of Germany, or for whatever rationale they want to give, and take the onus of it.
I see. It's hard for me to to start on this, but you believe that the liberals are behind all of this?
Behind, I think the liberals are the ones that are instigating against the reunification of Germany, are being the ones who are being vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they're not talking as liberals.
So I haven't really
political faction.
I haven't really seen anything vocal against reunification in this country.
Plenty of it.
I've seen the government of Israel went and said they were
uncomfortable
with that.
Statement which surprised me very much. He must be under a lot of pressure from the Labour Party,
which is run by liberals. Interesting. Well, you know, another thing, just to get away from this for a moment, why is it necessary for there to be reunification between? I mean,
it's not necessary, but the Germans want it.
But East Germany could exist as a separate state.
It broke the Soviet Union, their chronic grandstand on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
He still wants to be president.
Well, okay, now we're getting into territory that...
Yeah, but all these things interrelate.
Uh-huh.
Dole wants to be president. The Republicans and conservatives are irritated, and they've got an issue. They like to take an aggressive stand toward the Soviet Union. And they're saying, we don't want German reunification, because Germany is evil. Look at the Holocaust.
Right. Well, like I said before, that's, you know...
Well, talk.
That is racist to a degree. And I'll say something else that I find to be racist. I'm going to move on to another call. You take a look at old Hitler speeches, right? You see the guy yammering away there on TV or the documentary film or something like that. And, you know, the guy is talking fast, furious German, but you never see underneath what it is he's saying. Now, when I was in Germany this past summer, I was hanging out with some young Germans, and occasionally something would happen that would cause them to get excited, you know, like, you know, life does that to you occasionally. And they'd start yammering away in this fast-talking German, and right away I got all startled, and I said, whoa, that's Hitler talk. That sounds like Hitler the way they're talking. They're talking fast German and excited and, oh my God, what's going on here? It's a very subtle form of racism to be presented with that picture of Hitler speaking in excited German phrases and to say that's Nazism. That's not Nazism. What he was doing, what he was saying, the words he was saying, that was Nazism. But we don't know what the words were. They never translate that. And that really bothers me, you know, the more I think of it. I mean, God knows, there are a lot of guilty people for what happened during the Holocaust, during World War II. A lot of people that got away with it, and for all intents and purposes, they did get away with it. You know, there were thousands of Jews in East Germany, maybe even hundreds of thousands, I'm not certain, before the war. Now, hundreds. So, you could say Hitler succeeded to a degree. It's scary. But at the same time, let's not blame people who weren't even born. And the West Germans, the East Germans today are well aware of their history. They're well aware of what happened, and they're determined not to repeat it. And I don't think they will, because they have that link. They have that sense of what came before. And when you have that link with the past, you know, that's the key. That's what's so important. Because you're educated. You know something. You know what has happened. You know what mistakes have been made. And hopefully you're determined not to make them again. Our number is 279-3400. I'd like to move back to the Central America issues, you know, only because it's a big world and, you know, we could go on all day with this. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you used the word subtle.
Okay.
Because that is what we're issue. It's not the price issue that young man brought up. It's what it stood for. Don't you understand, my good man? You see, you remember the story about the Dutch boy and how he put his finger into the dike? One little finger in the dike of, you know, this country saved the country from a flood. And that young man was a hero. Now, he is being disparaged by everyone on the station, almost. He is allowed to speak for a moment to sort of, you know, we can say freedom of speech exists. Do you see what I mean? But this is not freedom of speech when he is reviled and he is hung up on and so on.
Who are you talking about?
I am talking about the problem that exists at WBAI. We listeners are given short shrift We are looked upon as the money people for this station. We are being, you know, treated in a kind of servile economic way.
Well, wait. Are you being treated in a servile way on this program now?
Well, yes, I was hung up on when I tried to come on to the real issue, the one right in our midst. The fact that this station is not doing what it should be doing, where it bans a Mike Fader who's had a program on for a long time when he said he didn't like some of the other broadcasters' attitudes. Now, what should have been done would be...
Well, folks, I'm sorry. He had a different accent that time, didn't he? But, you know, I don't know. So, start a mass movement. Maybe I'll listen then. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is there something you want to say?
I certainly will.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, my goodness, what's been going on? The last couple of callers has got me off tonight.
Yeah, I realize that's possible, but...
bombing of the where the poor people lived in El Salvador was done by the El Salvadorian Army or Air Force, is that correct?
Are you referring to the killing of the priests? Or?
Oh, wait. No, in fact, that's the point I'm going to make.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm talking about the Air Force of the El Salvadorian government bombing the villages of the people who were poor.
Okay, yes.
Thousands of people died there.
Over the last...
Yes.
How long a period of time is it now?
Since the let's think about the priests then, and then we've got the idea. About that time, okay. The number of people that were died when the nuns got raped were extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Children, like the lady called and mentioned, children that we seem to, and our morality profess to care so much about.
Not just in El Salvador, but all the children in Nicaragua. That you know, if they haven't been killed, they're being brought up in a war, and that screws you up for life.
Poverty.
And extreme poverty, too, of course.
Extreme poverty. And
wartime
death rate is really accounted in those numbers, and the impoverishment. But they didn't seem to hesitate in bombing. As poor as they are, and as in extremely poor as they are, the government didn't seem to hesitate in bombing those villages. Now, the point I'd like to make is that they said that there are something called death squads. Well, perhaps the death squad is the El Salvadorian government. Have we ever thought about that?
I think we have, and I think to a degree our government too.
Oh, I don't know, because you see, we seem to be parlaying it, playing it off on certain kind of individuals who are outside of the government who are doing these things.
I see your point. Right, of course. I mean, there is a very definite link in the article I read before. The people that put the current president in power are linked to these groups.
Well, the people that are fighting the current government in power were not part of that election process, were they?
I'm sorry, say that again?
People of El Salvador didn't have the opportunity to vote for the people who were fighting against the El Salvadorian government, the people that are called the guerrillas.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's...
But they say it was a legitimate government.
That's
it was
open,
a legitimately elected government.
Right, that's open to debate, depending on how you look upon what is fair and what is not fair. But I think, you know... We should look at this simplistically and just say, what are we doing there? You know, what is a big, huge country like this doing there in the first place?
And if you listen to things simplicity, you might miss the point. You can't get people going out by your saying they should go out.
Right.
You certainly can't get them going out by your saying that they should read newspapers. Because that's the things that are turning them off.
I don't know. I think
we have to talk about what's really going on. People do not have a say in their government.
So there's more than the mainstream press. You know, what I'm saying is there's more than the mainstream press. There's all kinds of papers and magazines.
We don't have access to that. You yourself said that we have not that many newspapers anymore.
I'm referring to daily newspapers, yes, but there's things like The Voice, there's things like, you know, all kinds of publications.
Those papers, like people don't listen to BAI.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd like to make a point.
The opportunity is there.
I've been on the phone for about an hour trying to get through, okay?
Uh-huh.
You talk for a long time, I'd like to talk.
Go ahead.
This government in its finest days in the 50s and the 30s and the 20s and back before then, and all the good people like what's his name said on the Bob Dylan said about being pawns, you white folks are real pawns, but we're your victims, man. Now, that's the problem you've got to deal with. You have to deal with how you sat and did nothing and still sit and do nothing. And what happens if you sit too long, you start to go crazy, you know? So that when the man says, communist, for instance, you foam at the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pavlov's dog. I think we have a problem when you talk about Cuba having a good birth mortality rate and all of that, but then you say, hey, but they don't have other things. What are the other things you're talking about? Are the other things you're talking about Jodashti jeans or Chrysler 88 models? Cuba has been under an embargo since it's been in existence. People have stopped goods and services from coming into Cuba. Has anybody set foot on this in this country in terms of a war footing like they did the Soviet Union? Has this country been destroyed and built again? Perhaps it would have been better if it had, maybe, and like Europe has, or any other place has, like every other place on this planet has. What excuse have we got for people reaching into garbage cans and eating out of them? And what shame do we walk around with? You know, before Hitler was able to take power, and you're Jewish, right?
Well, I don't talk about that kind of stuff on the air.
Oh,
but
before Hitler was able to take power, he had to build scapegoats, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
And he built the scapegoats on those who were the most disenfranchised or the least politically powerful, right? He did it on the gypsies. He did it on homosexuals, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
And the people went for it. Why did they go for it? When there were lynch mobs in the South, you think people just went up and said, we're going to lynch this nigga now? No. This nigga that they're going to lynch is the guy that raped some woman or yelled at some woman or something before. Any kind of excuse? And in the white people's impoverishment, they went out and lynched someone who was more victimized than they. You listen to Bob Dylan. Can I ask you how old you are?
Well, again, that's another thing I don't talk about on here.
Well, you see, life experience is very important if you're not book trained. And book trained doesn't do any good without life experience.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And you can't talk around these things without getting to the real meat of it. And this way you'll get people respond on Saturday and on Monday, like I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never vote for George Bush because George Bush doesn't represent a conversation. And George Bush is by no means a moderate, a CIA cutthroat. George Bush is a reactionary. And we've had reactionaries ever since the so-called civil rights movements. And that was the thing that began to set America free. As a consequence, we're eating dirt now. Who supported Hitler before he became Hitler? Was it really Stalin? Or was it John Henry Ford? Real anti-Semites. We got to know what we're talking about so we can talk truth to people. Because otherwise, like the fellow came on before and talked about African Americans. He called them blacks. I don't know who they are. African Americans are being used by so-called liberals, and I don't know what that is, about anti-Semitism in regards to Israel, who's breaking children's arms. And it was the American public that stopped that. Wasn't it? Because of their criticism of Israel, wasn't it? There are people in Israel who have views that are extremely, excuse the expression, I don't know what it is, but they call it progressive, that want to sit down and talk with other people rather than break children's hands. And they're considered anti-Semites, I suppose. If you mention Jesse Jackson's name, you're an anti-Semite. But he holds views that a lot of folks hold. And we got to deal with that because if we don't, you know who's going to rule the roost? Well, who's going to rule the roost is who's ruling it now. You understand?
Yes.
And it's very painful because the quality of life is extremely dear to all of us. If we do not celebrate the quality of life that we are capable of celebrating, then something diabolical is going to happen to our psychic and we'll be goose-stepping into the next century. Jew and Gentile alike. That's all I have to say.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Yes.
All right. 279-3400, that is our telephone number. And it's just about 17 minutes after 3 o'clock. We're here until 3:30. It's Emmanuel Goldstein filling in for Tom Whisker on the weaponry program. We'll be back for the next 2 weeks as well. And we will be taking some more phone calls right after this public service announcement. Don't take it too seriously.
the loudspeaker spoke up and said, The loudspeaker spoke up and said, Communism is good.
Can you hear that?
Give up.
Can you hear that?
Give up. Christianity is stupid. Give up. Christianity is stupid. Communism is good. Give up. From 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night.
By Vladislav Kozyukov on the coming Soviet-American summit in the Mediterranean. It was agreed in advance, he writes, that it would be an official meeting and that no agreement would be signed. However, it is not ruled out that Mikhail Gorbachev and George Bush will approve some directives and will give instructions to their foreign ministers or other representatives, especially in preparation for a summit due to take place in Washington next spring or summer. This seems to be very important. Such an approach makes it possible, given reciprocity, to advance in any field of cooperation and put any understanding into action. Moscow does not share the fears expressed by some American commentators and politicians prior to the meeting. They allege that a meeting in Malta will be like the meeting in Reykjavik. They have assured us that if anything like that takes place, it would be a disaster. The creation of this Reykjavik image is surprising. Wasn't it a real breakthrough in Reykjavik in 1986 when the two leaders coordinated nuclear disarmament objectives, adherence to which is now being reaffirmed by both sides in their work on an agreement on a 50% reduction in strategic offensive arms? Didn't the Reykjavik meeting contribute to the signing of the INF Treaty in 1987, a treaty called a historic accord in East and West alike? The impression is that some American politicians seem to be afraid of radical agreements. Shortly before the Mediterranean meeting, they wondered, with something of timidity, whether President Mikhail Gorbachev would come up with some new proposals. In the meantime, with all the importance of Soviet initiatives, the situation in the world, in particular in Europe, compels the West to adopt new, bold approaches for the benefit of cooperation. The perestroika in the USSR and renewal in Eastern Europe have given rise to rapid development. The essence of changes is to promote democracy, the freedom of nations, and freedom of choice. In these conditions, global understanding, in particular between the USSR and the United States, is of special significance. When President Bush spoke with Soviet parliamentarians in the White House on the threshold of the meeting in Malta, he asked what the United States could do to help the Soviet Union. The Soviet guest said that Americans could help by agreeing to reduce arms and expand economic ties with the Soviet Union. President Bush welcomed this and said that such an approach would be advantageous to both sides. Moscow believes the Mediterranean meeting could melt the ice of the Cold War completely and open the door wider for cooperation between the Soviet Union and United States for the benefit of their nations and also for the rest of the world. Commentary by Vladislav Kozyukov was prepared at the studios of Radio Moscow.
And it was re-aired here at the studios of WBAI in New York, where we thought you'd like to know what's being said. And we'd like to know what you have to say. And our telephone number is 279-3400. We don't have very much time left, only about 4 minutes or so, but we're going to make a valiant effort here to plow through these. Good morning. Good morning. Okay, well, perhaps I should say part of the game plan is you have to be there. You have to be on the other side of the phone. So let's see if we can both get on the phone at the same time. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
It concerns the show you did a few weeks ago when you were talking about the phone company.
Uh-huh.
There was a gentleman who had all sorts of information, and he left a P.O. box number. I'm just wondering if you happen to get that, if you have it. I know you probably don't have it right now.
I'll tell you what, write to me at the station. I don't have it here. If you write to me, I'll pass that information. Okay, well, then I'll probably pass that information along to you at some point.
You do have it, though?
I'm sure I can get it because I do have the show on tape someplace, and I'll dig it out.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
I'm going to a lot of trouble. I'll let you know that. Again, if you want to write to us or write to me, I'm Emmanuel Goldstein, and the address here is WBAI 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. That's right. Okay, let's take some more calls. Good morning. Is anyone there? Maybe there's something wrong with our phone.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have a little interesting little piece of tape here.
A piece of tape, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you should be able to hear it okay. Let me preface it that Tom Whisker sometimes plays these tapes of Arthur Godfrey giving you an earful tour of the Strategic Air Command, these vintage tapes from the 50s and whatnot.
Okay, speak up a bit so we can hear it.
Okay, okay. This is something a little more recent and more with your topic of El Salvador and Central America. So, hang on a second.
My God!
Hey there.
What have you done?
Don't go away. Don't go away.
what were all those noises? If anyone out there could translate those tones, I want to know what they are.
To Roosevelt Roads, Cuba. Germany, basically, Cuba, Puerto Rico, from McGill, Puerto Rico, Roosevelt Roads, and then down to Howard from there as well.
Roger, sir, I understand your basic request. However, please bring me the three flight plans again, floor.
What you're listening to there is a shipment of probably more guns headed down to Panama.
Fascinating. Do you have that on actual tape? I mean, obviously you do. You just played it. I was wondering if you might be able to send us the tape.
Send you the tape?
Yeah, because it was breaking up a bit over the telephone.
Oh, sorry.
But it would be a nice thing to like throw on a record or something.
I probably could, and the other side has something even a little more interesting in it. I happened to catch George while he was in the air the other day.
Did you? And did he make a phone call or something?
And but it wasn't. I didn't quite get George, but they kept on referring to the boss being on the same plane, and they were talking all about the Secretary of Defense. And
well, was the plane referred to as Air Force One?
No, actually, they didn't quite refer to it. I didn't actually pick up an identifier, but the traffic, they were talking to guys in Belgium and setting up all this stuff, and it was like two personal secretaries talking about his schedule for next week and all this stuff.
I see.
Lining up press conferences. It was funny, they were talking about the guy from the New York Times is, Well, no, we'll give him the New York Times is okay. We can give him an interview.
Yeah, well, they've heard of that.
Yeah, right.
Listen, sir, we got to go.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling, though, and thanks to all the other folks out there that have called. And my apologies to those folks that did not get through. I mean, it happens occasionally, but I'll be back again next week between the hours of 1 and 3:30, talking about something. I mean, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. Of course, the Malta summit, as it were, will be taking place, and we might have some, you know, amazing thing out of that. We might have nothing at all. But I do want to see people at the El Salvador rally on Saturday. It starts at 11 o'clock in the city. And just keep listening to the BAI, and you'll hear more specific details on that, I'm sure. And, you know, look around other places, too. I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk of it. Let's hope we get thousands of people in the street, because this is something very important to us, to our future, to the people of many other countries, as well as one country in particular. Anyway, it's been my pleasure to be here with you. Emmanuel Goldstein, filling in for Tom Whisker. Thanks again to everybody that called in, and we'll see you again soon. Good night.
Hey, you! Don't watch that! Watch this! This is the heavy, heavy monster sound!
Monsters from the id.
Listen up, you groovy girl and killer chick. There's a horror in the bubble your blood.
I called up the monster DJ one night under a full moon. I said, please play something gruesome. I want to hear a scary tune. He said, hey man, that's my specialty. I can handle that request. Our stopping horror Halloween is what I like to play the best.
The Monster DJ is on the air, creeping into your home tonight. The Monster DJ has got the sound to make you scream and fright.
He plays Harry, Fang, and the Wolfman, the Ghouls, and the Crypt King of Five, Mary Cemetery, and the Tombstones with the hit. Radio started shaking and gurgling like a rocking disease terror tune. Blood oozed out from the speaker.